This is episode 360, dated Friday, May 17th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. This is episode 360, dated Friday, May 17th, 2024. As a matter of fact, I believe this is our seventh anniversary of In Perspective. We've been on the air now for about 7 years. Time flies when you're having fun. Anyway, before we continue, allow me to introduce our friend and colleague and co-host, Peter O'Toole, over in Coos Bay, Oregon. Peter, how are you?
Congratulations. 7 years is a long time to have a show on the air, and it's to your credit, Bob, that it's been on for such a long time. And hopefully, and here's another for another 7 years or however long you want it to be.
Absolutely.
Oh, and the weather here is gorgeous. One of the things I didn't expect about Oregon weather, which I'm learning pretty quickly, is so the temperature outside is 65 degrees. So if you were living in your average place of 65 degrees, would you be wearing a jacket or not?
Probably not.
Correct. But you have to wear a jacket here because the winds gust to 20, 30 miles an hour and it's off the ocean. So you really have to wear even if the sun's out, you have to wear a light jacket. Otherwise, if you're standing in one place for more than 30 seconds, you freeze.
Well, how far are you from the ocean?
I am literally, I think it's a 5 or 10 minute drive to the bay, and the ocean is another 20 minutes away. But, you know, the bay is still water. And yeah, this is a new thing for me because I was raised on Cape Cod. And, you know, once June rolled around, you know, ordinarily didn't wear anything except for a shirt, unless it was pouring rain or something, but not here in Oregon.
See, I thought you were raised in New York. So
I spent many summers on Cape Cod. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. My mom is there now. Happy 92nd birthday, Mom. And she's lived there for on and off for close to, I don't know, 50, 60 years. I have to do the math. It's been a while.
What town?
Yeah. Now she's in Brewster.
Brewster. Okay. That's on the ocean.
That's correct. It is on the ocean.
All right.
So that's a long way of saying the weather here is gorgeous, but you got to wear a jacket.
Of course. Let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be aired. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. It's much appreciated, right? Also, the media outlets. Thank you for airing us when you do. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place chat service. Thank you so much for posting our programs. And of course, we'll never forget Jackal and Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, who archives our programs on my website. If you want to hear archives from the past, I don't know if all 7 years are up there, maybe 6 out of the 7, but that's okay. Just go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts, and click on those, and you will look at all of our archives, or most of them, from latest to earliest.
Yeah, see, Jackie.
I want to thank, at this time, Jean from Arizona. She is our host for today's program. Thank you very much, Jean. And, of course, I want to thank Brad for streaming us live on ACB Media 5. Thank you for doing that. And because you're doing it, I would like to give out my email address for those people who are listening. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com in case you have any questions or comments about our programs and would like to give your opinions about them. We are scheduled to have on the program Charlie Murphy. I don't know if he's here yet.
I am. Hi, Bob.
There you are. Hi, Charlie. Charlie How's Murphy is the president. How are you? He's the president and CEO and founder of MO Life Incorporated. So he's going to talk about that along with advocacy in general and how it's important for inclusion. One thing about MO Life that I recall, and Charlie, feel free to correct me, it's all about inclusion in the community along with other, you know, proportions of life for persons with disabilities.
Absolutely.
So Tell us what led you to start MO Life. What was your dream at the time?
Well, when I was 5 years old, my father missed a step in a cement staircase and developed a traumatic brain injury. And so I grew up with my grandmother having to move in and showing my father where you put the milk when you're done with it, what salt and pepper is for, and really the basics that he had to be trained and taught and retaught. So I've always grown up with a person with a disability in my life. And I went to school to become a veterinarian. I went to the University of Georgia to be a veterinarian and ended up with a degree in food science management, and then came back up north because my father was dying and to be with, so my mother wouldn't be alone, and stayed up here. I went back to school. I went to Assumption College to get my master's degree, and my thesis was MO Life.
And that stands for Murphy and Others Living Independently for Future Endeavors.
Yep. Living interdependently.
Interdependently. Could you explain, because a lot of people get confused with the term, and I know that you can shed some light on this for us. What is interdependence?
So basically, we all need someone or one another, you know, in our lives. We do have a lot of independence, but interdependence is, you know, just like working together with someone else to continue to enhance our lives. More of a teamwork approach.
One of the ways I like to view this, and if I have it wrong, let me know, that you have on one end of the spectrum independence, on the other end of the spectrum dependence, and somewhere in the middle is interdependence. And Depending on the circumstances, interdependence might mean different things at different times to different people, depending on the circumstances.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay. So from what I remember, you started the organization in 1995, I believe. Maybe I'm wrong.
Unofficially in 1994, but then 94. Incorporated.
So this will be the 30th anniversary of MO Life.
It's the 30th anniversary of MO Life. Yeah. We've come a long way. And Bob, you were there right from the beginning. You knew what MO Life was about. You've served on the board of directors at MO Life, and you've been a very strong advocate for people with disabilities as well. We do so many different things now. We've grown incredibly over the past 30 years, as you can imagine. We have not only our job development, job coaching, you know, career services, but we also have our day program, community-based services, and we do day programming. We do skills training. We have transportation services, more limited recently, but we also do a food pantry in downtown New Bedford that we've had since the year 2000. So we're pretty diverse.
Go ahead,
Bob.
Anybody can use the food pantry, right? Doesn't have to be clients. Anybody can use the food pantry.
Yeah, correct? Anyone that has a need, you know, for food, we offer that service every Wednesday from 11 to 1. And it's right in downtown New Bedford, right next to the post office, if anyone has wanted the location on Pleasant Street. So more recently, last year, we started MO Life Counseling Services as well. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, and I have other counselors working with me to provide mental health services now at MO Life.
So you started this business nearly 30. That's a nonprofit. That's not a business. I assume it's a nonprofit, right?
It's a nonprofit. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you started this nonprofit 30 years ago. What prompted you to start it then? You know, and what was sort of what was your vision when you started, and what did the organization start doing? What was it doing back 30 years ago?
So the organization was started as part of my thesis project for my master's degree. And what I wanted was a non-site based organization where people would be picked up from their homes and brought to their job or brought to, you know, the gym or some community endeavor without having to go to a building and then, you know, waiting for a magical hour of 9 a.m. to go off with your group. I wanted more kind of independent one-on-one kind of training. And I started out with one person from Mass Rehab and they were absolutely great to help me through the process of writing a grant. And also Phil Tully from DDS, Department of Developmental Services, took a chance with me on with one person as well who was doing independent living at the time, shared living, you might say. They might call it now, actually. But it was because of Phil Tully and Cheryl Cormier from Mass Rehab that really gave me a chance, because I was a new kid on the block. And so they had never heard of anything like this. You know, you had to have a location. You had to have a building. And I said, no, I don't think you do. You know, you can do it without that. I mean, we've grown to the point where, you know, as you get bigger, yeah, you do need a little bit more structure than, you know, I started in the basement of my house, you know, with a desk and a computer, or, you know, or actually it was more like a word processor computer. It wasn't even a full computer, because it was so, it was the internet, not what it was now, but it was 30 years ago.
And so
you've come a long way.
I'm curious. You mentioned, for example, one of the services you provided, how you started it, was providing more custom transportation, right, to people so they could get to where they wanted to go. They didn't have to wait, you know, indefinitely. How does that connect or differ from, say, paratransit, which was aimed to do sort of a similar kind of thing?
I think what we were different from MO Life is that the job coach, or the person that you'd be working with for the day, the whole day, would be the person picking you up in the morning. And so they'd bring you to your job, and if you needed job coaching or job instruction, they'd be right there on the job with you. And then when your day was over, they'd bring them home.
Tell us a little bit more about the job coaching, because I know that one of the important things that MO Life does for people with disabilities is to help with the employment process. And a lot of people that I know personally have jobs thanks to MO Life. And I know you have job coaches. What are the roles of the job coaches? What do they do?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yes. Well, the job coach is someone that will go there and help the person with different elements of the job that they may need a little more assistance with. Not to do the job for them, but to be an assistant, a guide with the job coach. A coach can do something like a task analysis, meaning that, you know, the chunks of the job broken down. And in that person, we have many people that do not need a job coach. We simply do a job check-in with them. They've developed so much of their job themselves. And, you know, we even have people that don't want a job coach there. There's their job, and they said, you can check in with my boss, but, you know, I don't need anybody telling me how to do my job. I know how to do my job. But the job coach is there just for an assistant, if necessary.
Yeah, and thinking about job coaches, I just started a new job, and part of the challenge I'm experiencing is the technology has changed a lot since I worked full time, which was a while back. And so I have somebody who's come by for a day and a half at a time over the past couple of weeks to sort of help me figure out how I'm going to do those elements of the job. And I hadn't really thought about that kind of service as a job coach per se, but it seems to me it is another example of a job coach, somebody who you need help doing certain things. So you use their expertise so that you can do the job better.
Yes. Yep.
Which I find sort of interesting. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I have a job coach right now. It's not official. It's not formal, but you know, he goes by, you know, once a month, once every 6 weeks for a while until I'm, you know, fully settled, and then I'll be on my own. But anyway, it's an interesting thing. So talk about the job. Do you help people find jobs as well?
We do. What we do is we don't find a job then match and put the person in the job, because everyone has likes and dislikes, and everyone has, you know, a career path that they'd like to follow. And so what we do is we do a little training process first, especially in our Mass Rehab program. And what you do is you go and you do job trials. And we do this a lot with the students that we work with in the schools. And you actually go to a job and take a job trial, like someone that say they might be interested in working in the supermarket or in the food industry. And we take them to the food pantry and stock shelves. And some people say, I would never want to do this ever. So I want to look at something else. But we have an interest survey that we do with the individuals. And from the interest survey is where we get the the job developers will go out and look in those particular fields. Like we have someone that works at the local hospital in the nutrition department, and she's handles some of the different, you know, gathering of the food for the menus that are going to be happening during that day. So, I mean, it's a wide variety of jobs, and she absolutely loves her job. She loves working for the hospital. She loves working in nutrition. She knows what it's, how it's helping people because of her, you know, her skills that she has. And we have other people that are working, you know, in jobs that are, you know, probably not stressful to some people, but stressful to others, you know, like in the retail industry. But it's really, it's where the interest survey lies and what the person would like to do in their own job search.
You also involve your clients in the community. You encourage interaction with the community, which I think is a very valuable tool, because a lot of people today and even before today don't really understand, and it's not their fault, they don't understand what it's like to have a disability unless they're familiar with the situation. And I think inclusion is very, very important.
Absolutely. We have people involved in, you know, we're based in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, and we have people involved in the rec center here. We have people involved. We just actually, because of one of my employees, Diane Sylvia, working in collaboration with the recreational center here in Kelly, who is a person in charge of that, did a grant for a fishing derby, which will be happening in June. And what happens, accessible fishing day. So it's going to be a great event, but it's collaborating with other community leaders that helps with all this process here to really make some really beneficial programming and interest, you know, interest that people have.
You've used two buzzwords that are hot buzzwords these days. I'm curious to know how you define them or what they mean to you or however you want to frame it. The first word is inclusion. What does inclusion mean to you?
I think inclusion means that everyone should have the same opportunities no matter who you are. And just to, you know, as all services should be open to everyone. So I think inclusion is basically your human rights, you know, and your human rights to be included.
And how do you balance, this is a, how do you balance sort of the including some people might exclude other people kind of thing? How do you sort of balance that? If that makes any sense. How do you make it so that as many people as possible can be included without excluding too many people?
Well, I think it also goes into your likes and dislikes. I mean, we have some people that love to go to the Providence Bruins games that we have, and we offer those services so that we can do a group outing to the Providence Bruins. You know, I wouldn't exclude anyone from that, but people would not, you know, don't feel that they want to be included in that. But then when we go to like Six Flags or if we go to another event, you know, it's really, you know, open to what their likes and dislikes are. And we, every year we have this big, huge gala, which is it's a ball. It used to be called the MLife Ball. Now we have it called the MLife Gala. And that's where everyone, and my envision on that was that everyone gets dressed up and there is no differences. Everyone is there having a good time. We have politicians there. We have, you know, guest speakers there. We have everyone. And very important is that we have the dance floor because that's
I've been to several of them and I had fun at all of them.
It's always a fun time.
Yes. There's another event that you do and people have given me good reports on their experiences with it. I don't think you do it annually. Maybe you do it more often than I think you do, but you also run cruises.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who have been on your cruises and they've had a good time. Could you tell us about your cruises?
Sure. Every year, well, it kind of slows down during the pandemic. You know, we really were, you know, like everyone else, you know, here, we kind of had to put a hold on a lot of fun things that we had in our lives. But the cruises are, you know, we about a year out, we plan a cruise. We're going on our first cruise since the pandemic this October. And we're really excited about it, but it just provides another opportunity for people to have life experiences and travel the world. And we like to do that at MLife. We like to have fun and enjoy life, you know, where our name is MLife, you know, so we want to enjoy life. And so people have enough time. That's why we do it usually a year out to save because cruises have extremely gone up in price. And so what we have is I've met up with this cruise director, and he is actually going to attend the cruise with us, you know, to make sure that we, you know, have our dinner reservation set up and we have our excursions all planned. And we, and I have quite a bit of staff people that are going as well. And so it's really a way to have a great vacation and a safe vacation.
Where is this year's cruise taking you?
To Bermuda.
Oh, Bermuda. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're going at a good time of year.
Yeah.
October. Cruises are pretty expensive, as you mentioned. I would imagine a lot of your clients would have a hard time finding money to go on a cruise. How does that work? Do you try to subsidize some of the costs, or how do you work that out?
Well, it's like anyone taking a vacation. A lot of the people that are going on the cruise have jobs and they work, and then they also have other sources of income.
Sure.
And what they do is that's why I do it so far out, so that people have time to save. And they have time to save money, because you're right, it is expensive. And since the pandemic, since this is our first one since then, the prices have incredibly gone up. And so that's why, you know, with the advance, people can have time to save if they so choose to go on the cruise. But like any vacation that you can go on, you know, if any one of us wanted to go on a cruise, I mean, you can't just, you know, sign up and pay for it outright. You have to, you know, there has to be a process of deposit, saving up every month. People have made payments, you know, along the way here. And so it's just a matter of saving, you know, and we help people with that. We help people budget and save and work on that calculation of what this will be every month. If you want to go on a cruise and you have to save up, you know, you'd have to save, you know, an additional $100 this month. You know, you'd have to do that. And a lot of families are very supportive. And they have helped their son or daughter to go on the cruise because they don't want them to miss out on that opportunity. So I have a lot of families that help out, even if they help out another family. That's how generous some families are.
And who's your population? I know you serve people with disabilities, but what kind of disabilities? What's your client base?
Well, it's mostly developmental disabilities, but also, you know, people that have, you know, minor intelligent disabilities and Down syndrome, you know, some sort of, you know, cognitive disability and some physical disabilities. We also support people with some physical disabilities.
And you talked about your dad and, you know, the experience you had around him and how that sort of motivated you to move in this direction. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about sort of serving people with disabilities over the 30 years you've been running this business? What surprised you? What have you learned? What are you thinking about these days when it comes to disability?
Well, I'll be honest with that. I learn something every day. I mean, I haven't stopped learning, and that's what prompted me to go back to school to even get more education and more items, because I've learned that the mental health needs of everyone, whether you have a disability or not, has greatly increased. And so I wanted to do more of my part in helping out and enhancing the community by becoming a licensed mental health therapist. So because I find that what I've learned is that, you know, mental health needs have, you know, definitely increased. And the other thing that I've learned is that the beauty of celebrating the simple things, and I don't think we do that enough. Mm-hmm. One man that we brought on the cruise never had been on an elevator in his life, and because he had so much fear. And so he little by little, you know, went into the elevator and walked out. And then by the end of the cruise, he was taking the elevator and he said, you know, this is the first time I've ever taken the elevator. And he goes, I got sick of taking the stairs. And he goes, and it motivated me to learn how to take the elevator. And he thanked me so much because now from this, you know, the cruise was great. You know, he had a great time. But what he got out of that is, I don't have a fear of elevators anymore. And it's so celebrating those simple things that, you know, some people just take for granted, but those are big deals. Those are big deals.
As a population, Charlie, we need to relax more and settle for the simple things. It's not a problem. There's nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of times, and I'm not saying we all do it, far from it, but a lot of people in today's society, it's all about hurrying up and you got to do this and you got to do that. Mm. And I think we should just take a collective breath once in a while and say, let's just enjoy life. That doesn't mean we have to shirk our other responsibilities. It just means that we have to try to enjoy the simple things more and more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many things that we can celebrate every day, you know, that may not seem like a big deal to some people, like I said, but, you know, it's something that, you know, you can celebrate in your own way, you know, and get that positive energy and and that positive uplifting, you know.
How has the world changed over the past 30 years? And better or for worse, how's the world remained the same? How's it different? What are you noticing when it comes to sort of differences and similarities back between the 90s and today when it comes to sort of disability?
So I think 30 years ago, we were on the right track. You know, we also had the Americans with Disabilities Act that was signed, you know, so we were on the right track. And I think what has happened now is that people look for people for jobs, and especially since the pandemic. I mean, so it's not like, you know, like, oh, I don't want to hire this person because they have a disability. I think we've come a long way from that. I hope. but I've noticed that people are very eager to hire pretty much anyone, you know, that if they have the qualifications for the job. So I've noticed that change. And I think that's been worldwide that people, you know, because there's been such lack of workers too. But I think that, you know, everyone is considered a valuable worker these days. And maybe 30 years ago, we had to push that a little bit more to, you know, like, you know, with tax incentives and all that. But I see that the employment world and the world in general, you know, are very, you know, recognizing people's abilities as opposed to focusing on the disabilities.
I think you're right about that. And I'd also worry, or at least think about, you talked about how mental health needs have increased. I think that's true. And we could talk about why that is. But one of the things I've sort of noticed, especially over the past 10 years, and maybe I'd be curious to know what your take on this. I think the world has gotten less community focused and more focused on smaller things like families and individuals. And we're less willing to reach out. And I'm talking in very general terms. There are exceptions to everything.
Sure.
But I'm wondering if you're sort of seeing that as well and how that's impacting, if you are, how that's impacting the work you're doing.
So I've seen that more on the volunteer level. I mean, people, you know, there's generations out there that like, oh, you have to, you know, volunteer at the food pantry. You don't get paid to do that. And I'm like, no, it's a volunteer that, you know, the food pantry is volunteer. I see it in older populations still very eager to do that volunteer work. And it's harder and harder to get people to volunteer. I mean, if you look at churches, sometimes even churches are having a hard time finding volunteers. You know, it's just, it's the volunteer concept, you know, is more of a struggle I've noticed. But I also do notice that people do want to be their families and people do like different things since the pandemic. You know, some people liked, you know, not having things open late, and they kind of liked that. It brought them closer as families, and other people couldn't wait to get back out in the community. But so there's two sides of every story. But I think it's harder to find volunteers today.
So I want to go back to, I told you there are two words I wanted you to talk about. You talked about inclusion. The other words you talked about, said a couple of times, is the word advocacy. What does advocacy mean? What makes a good advocate?
I think advocacy means, you know, making sure that person's human rights are respected and noticed and, you know, worked with. I think that some people are great advocates, self-advocates themselves, and I think they can pretty much do their own, you know, advocacy work for themselves. But there are certain people that, you know, may need a little bit more assistance, and, you know, they may be a little shy, or they may be, you know, not as, you know, assertive with their communication. And I think that the advocacy for making sure that, you know, everyone's rights are, you know, we all have human rights, and we want to make sure that we all have those human rights respected. And that's what I would advocate for.
And again, what makes for a good advocate? I agree with what you're saying. Yeah, advocacy involves improving human rights for everybody, but you know, whatever. But what makes for a good advocate?
I think true belief in your vision. I think you can be a good advocate if you truly believe what you're advocating for. I mean, you could have, there's political advocates, you know, that are in Washington DC. And, you know, I'm sure they do really believe what they're doing, but I mean, they're also being paid to do that, you know, but I think that if you really have that belief and that vision for advocacy, I think that's what makes a true advocate.
You were talking about the residence program. You have some sort of a residency program for people in living situations. Tell us about that, Charlie.
Sure. We operate two 24-hour homes, residential homes in the greater New Bedford area. And what that is so we have staff 24 hours a day with the individuals to make sure that their needs are met, make sure that they have their medications properly administered. They're all MAP certified and make sure that
MAP stands for what?
Medical Administration Program.
Thanks. I just said,
I know we tend to use a lot of acronyms in this.
Yeah, exactly.
And we just assume that everyone knows what they mean, but that is something that is very important. We also are very blessed in the Greater New Bedford area that we have a great working relationship with DDS, which is the Developmental Disability Services, and also Mass Rehab, which is MRC, which is the Mass Rehab Commission. And also with the commission, the Mass Commission for the Blind. So we also have a very good relationship with them as well. And I think it's when, you know, those are the people that give us the referrals. And, you know, every 2 years you go through a licensure program and you have to meet high criteria and to get a high score. I'm very proud to say that we just went through that credentialing program and we got a full 2 year license. And so they check everything. They check our books. They interview the individuals that we serve. They interview some of the employers. They interview a wide gamut of sometimes families, you know, to check on our services. And they do that through the state to make sure that we're number one, doing what we're supposed to be doing, but also, you know, doing it to the best quality that we can.
So it's a very thorough investigation.
It's very thorough. And every organization that receives Department of Developmental Services funding gets this process every 2 years.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost time. I'm sorry, Peter, you had another question.
I do. So let me just ask this question and then I'm happy to turn it over. So what I'm hearing, at least around here in Missouri, when I live there, is that it was a hard time hiring good people for the jobs you were describing at these homes, you know, group homes. How are you doing hiring people and keeping them, and what's your turnover rate? You know, how are you handling that challenge?
Residentially, staffing is always an issue. It's always an issue. And it was especially hard during COVID. You know, if an individual got COVID, it was very hard to find staffing. We had to do a lot of incentives, and we have done a lot of incentives. Like if you work on the weekend, your hourly rate is much higher. You know, if you work overnights, you know, you have a higher rate. And so we've retained a lot of good staff by, you know, because the staff really do believe in the mission and vision. It's hard to find people like that, but they will stay. They will stay. But it's, once again, it's hard to find staff like that. But we, you know, I have a very dynamic residential director, Anna, and she's very good. She's 125% dedicated. And so she makes sure that everything is covered. And if it's not covered, then she'll come in and she'll do a shift. And she's amazing. But it's finding key people like this is what really is important. Because, you know, it is hard to find residential staff in any organization.
You said something I think is really important, and that is they have to believe in the mission and vision. And that's true. I think that's true. But I think it's more important that they see that you as leadership believe in it as well. Because if they don't think you do, they will run as fast as they can away. That's what my experience anyway.
And I think, you know, one thing that I've been taught, sorry, Bob.
Go ahead. No problem. Go ahead.
So like I had to get back to the bottom line here. So I went and got MAP certified myself. I went back to college and got a second master's degree because you can never stop learning. And I need to make sure that I have done every single job at MO Life, from the billing to the job coaching to the, you know, residentially, the med administration. So I've done everything at MLife. So I think my staff respect me because they know that I started from, you know, the bottom and basically built it up to where it is today. And by doing every single job that my staff do.
I think that's awesome. Bob?
Yes. So it's about time, Charlie, for you to meet some of our participants that are listening in on our show right now.
Awesome.
Just to review, I'm Bob Branco and my co-host is Peter Altschul. You're listening to In Perspective with our guest, Charlie Murphy, president and founder of MLife Incorporated. And what I'm going to do now is ask Jean, our host, if we have any hands raised.
We do. Newsy Juliana, I believe.
This is Tony.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're the one that was Tony. Okay.
Yeah. I knew that was going to happen.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Charlie. First of all, congratulations and really, really great work. I have a comment and then I actually have a question. My comment is if you have another thesis in front of you, the tracking of the changing mental health needs through how your organization has changed over the years, this probably tells a really great story because I'm sure it's like with everything else, you have evolved because you saw what was needed in the community and from your consumers. So I think you could probably track an awful lot of history just through the movement of your own organization through the years.
Right. Yes.
Now here's my question. Because you sound like the not-for-profit administrator that has to go out there and do a lot of fundraising. Do you have to go out there and do a lot of fundraising?
Yes, we do. We really do. In fact, we're having a golf tournament coming up at end of June. We have the big gala that's going to be in November at the Venus de Milo. I have to go out and I've been to California to some conferences and met some actors and everything like that who want to participate in helping out MLife and just got to constantly market, you know, MLife too, cause I need, you know, you need funding, you need a source of funding. We just, you know, and it can be done even locally. I have a friend who graduated with her master's degree. She's having her graduation party on Saturday this weekend. And she, instead of wanting gifts, she went and contacted one of my program coordinators at MLife. And so what she wants for gifts is like tickets for the zoo, aquarium. She wants activity books for MLife. She wants supplies for the MLife individuals. So everything that she's asked for her, and she has a big following, and everything she's asked for is all to be donated to MLife individuals so that they can have extra opportunities and stuff like that. It's these people that I'm so blessed with in my life that really I help out because it's more than, see, M stands for Murphy and the O stands for others because Murphy could not do it without the others.
It's a team effort.
Thank you, Charlie.
It's hard to argue with that.
Thank you, Tony, for your contribution.
So just quickly to funding. So you must get funding from national foundations, private foundations and the government and all that. It runs the gamut of funding.
Mm-hmm. The state funds us through contracting and each individual comes into MLife with a certain amount in their contract for a specific purpose. It could be for residential. It could be for job development. It could be for independent supports, individual supports. It could be for, you know, day programming. So everyone comes. So the majority of our funding is through the state of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Jean, do we have any other hands raised?
Not at the moment, but the minute I say that, I know that someone will raise their hand.
Just feel free to interrupt us when that happens. That's the only way we'll really know.
All right. I will do
that. Thank you. So, Charlie, you were talking about the gala earlier, and of course, I had the pleasure of attending, I think, three or four of them anyway, maybe five.
Sure.
And your program was very well organized. It was the presentation, you had many people speaking about MLife. And then right afterwards, you had a disc jockey. Mm-hmm. And it was somebody that I remember the gentleman that I recommended to you at the beginning. I'll give him a plug. His name is Mark DeShane.
Yes.
He's still around, by the way. I'm not sure how much he's performing anymore, but we are still in touch.
Yes. And Mark really just was so creative and made sure that all the music was great. He's back of, you know, quite a few years ago, maybe about 7 to 10 years ago, he decided that that was getting too much for him. The gala was getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, he, you know, it was just getting a little bit too much for him. He still does. I see him sometimes when he does like maybe some nursing homes. He goes in there and, or some, you know, minor, like maybe just some small day programs that he does. So he's still active and he was great. But yeah, that was a good call, Bob, because Mark really carried us through many years with the gala and the ball at the time. So yes, you've always helped MO Life in so many ways, Bob. And congratulations, if I don't forget to say this, on 7 years of perspective. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, you know, we've done 360 episodes. And so if you divide that by seven, that's just about 50 to 52 episodes per year. So we do it
that's
weekly.
An accomplishment. Yeah, that's an accomplishment.
You know, of course, we thank you for being a part of it. If anybody wants to get involved with MO Life, what would they have to do, Charlie?
Well, we have a website, which is www.molifeinc.com. And on the website, it really goes into details of all of our programs. It's got a volunteer request on there. If someone was interested in one of the events that we're having, it's on the website. And so the website is really the best way to go. And if someone had a specific question, they can call our office directly at 508-992-5978. And, you know, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Or I do get a lot of calls from people that are looking for certain types of services. And whether it could be from MO Life or not, you know, there's always, I've got a good working relationship with a lot of my colleagues. And, you know, everyone comes to the table with a different gift. And we try to make sure that the person finds that right person, so, or that right connection.
I feel compelled to ask this question because you're reaching a national audience right now, maybe even internationally. It all depends on who's going to listen or who is listening.
Sure.
What would you recommend to people in other states across the country if they want to follow suit with what you're doing? Because you are setting an example, and there are people all over this country who need services the way your clients need them. So I'm assuming that others in the United States would want to follow suit if that's what they think of doing. What would you recommend?
Sure. Especially if you get in touch with the local rehab centers. I mean, because obviously Massachusetts is called Mass Rehab. I'm not sure in other states if they have something similar to DDS, Department of Developmental Services, but I'm sure that they do. And I'm sure there's plenty of need out there. And so if someone wanted to start their own business, they might want to consider reaching out to them and finding out what the need is and if they can meet those needs and if they could, you know, assist people and, you know, maybe helping people get jobs or assist people. And if there's an individual out there that wants some extra support and services, to contact these agencies to get the assistance that they may need, whether it be long-term, short-term. You know, what we do with our Mass Rehab contracts is usually short term. People come in, they need a job, they get a job, they stay 90 days on the job and 120 days on the job, and then they don't need us anymore. They've already started their own career path. And there are other people that may need a little bit more long-term kind of supports. So it, you know, it varies, but every state should have some sort of rehabilitation commission or developmental disability services so that people should reach out to them.
And if your state doesn't have it, I would suggest you go to your legislation or go to the people in power and kind of make the hint to suggest that this should exist.
Yes, it should exist in every state. Every state.
What do you think is causing the increase of mental health challenges among people with disabilities? You've talked about it already. What do you think is causing it?
I think the pandemic had a really tough effect on not only people with disabilities, but I think everyone. I think that it was hard for the social isolation and now it's hard to get back into things. You know, it was a big transition. It's hard on businesses, you know, during that. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, got a great, you know, pay, you know, for a certain amount of time. And then now, you know, there people, I think what's incredibly stressed out people and its financial concerns. I think A lot of people have developed a lot of great anxiety over financial situations and making payments or even, you know, paying for their rent, you know.
Yeah, I think COVID does have something to do with it. And I also think that I talked about the lack of interdependence, as it were. I think when you're forced to rely on resources that don't exist, you can get stressed pretty quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. I find a lot of people have developed a lot of great anxiety over the past few years, and it's not going away.
What are your plans for the future?
So I've just started this counseling program services, and I hired a vice president of operations, Louisa, who came in, and she's got a wealth of knowledge. And so I can focus on the counseling aspect, and she can focus more on the operations. So I'd like MLI to be known as one of the, you know, a good umbrella of great services that you can choose from. And one of them being meeting your mental health needs.
And so what programs or what are you thinking about doing in the future or expanding or contracting? What are your plans over the next couple of years?
So the plans over the next couple of years is to really develop more of our residential program and kind of enhancing the supports that we do. I mean, if there is such a need for even vacation planning with folks, you know, that is something that is pretty unique at MLI, and expanding maybe the vacation planning. So, you know, like vacation planning, not simply just a cruise, but, you know, we used to do trips also to, like, you know, Pennsylvania or Niagara Falls, where we could drive and we could save a lot of money by doing that, by driving to the different locations. So I'd like to maybe enhance that, get back into this. The cruise is the first real trip that we've had since the pandemic, and everyone is super excited. I walk in the door and everyone's like, oh, can't wait for the cruise. I said, I know it's in October, but it's great. I mean, it's just seeing that excitement, and I'd like to see more of that excitement. I'd like to see, you know, more of expansion of our services and, you know, kind of increasing our services as much as we can. We have a staff of about 70 people right now, and we service about, I'd say, almost close to 200 people.
I'm not an expert on this. It sort of, that strikes me as a really high staff to serve 200 people. Do I have that wrong? I mean, 70 people, 70 staff, 200 people. It strikes me as a very good staff to customer client ratio.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we do have a lot of one-on-one supports, but a lot of the staffing comes from our residential because, you know, sometimes you have to fill three shifts, you know, and it has to be two people on the shift. So a lot of our staff are residential, and then we have our day program, and we have a program manager, and we have a VP of operations, we have human resources, we have administrative support, we have billing people, we have a CFO, we have, you know, so. I mean, before the pandemic, we were up to like 85, I think, people on staff, and we've just started, you know, reaching back up to that 68 to 70 people. But I think, you know, because we have so many departments and so many facets of MLI that it's really broken down to, we have an employment facet, you know, a community based day services. We have individual supports kind of component. We have the residential component. We have transportation component. We have mental health services component. So it's, you know, I think it's broken down into individual categories, and that's what increases the amount of staff that we have.
Do you do fire safety and things
Absolutely.
Like that? Protection, mm-hmm. you know,
we like do that. Every year. We do mandatory fire safety. We do human rights training every year. We do it, and sometimes throughout the year. We bring guest speakers in. We just recently, last year, we celebrated Juneteenth in a formal way at MLI, but we had a man come in and talk about what the real meaning of Juneteenth is. And so we try to educate, and we try to, you know, bring people to the awareness of the different holidays that we're celebrating and try to just educate as much as we can.
How does MLI set up a residence? In other words, somebody wants to get services in a residential setting. Where do the residences come from?
Before you answer that, we are at 8 minutes to the end.
Thank you, Jean.
So people would usually talk to their service coordinator, and they may say that they're ready to try some different type of living. Maybe, you know, their parents are getting older and they're looking for other options residentially. And so they'd probably contact them. And then what the service coordinator would do is, you know, contact us if we had an availability. You know, right now we have, you know, pretty full, you know, but we only have two houses, you know, so they would probably look into, you know, if we wanted to buy, you know, rent another house. You know, we don't own our houses. We actually lease them from the landlords, and we have people living there, you know, what, like 24-hour care. And some people may need it. It could be a life circumstance that happens to them that they're all of a sudden in need of residential placement at that time. But, you know, because as within all of our lives, sometimes life can change really fast and there is a need that wasn't there before.
I would imagine that part of a major part of your work behind the scenes is having strong relations with other agencies that, you know, work with the same population you do in one way or another. How does that work? How do you find the time to do all that? And how are those alliances going?
So it's funny you say that, because I'm going the director of Better Community Living. This is another residential program here in the greater New Bedford area. We're going out for lunch next Friday. I mean, it's just finding the time to get together with your colleagues and just to, you know, bounce ideas off of each other. And, you know, there's no stealing of things, of ideas. It's just sharing, the sharing of ideas, because we have to get beyond that. Because we're all in this field, and there's not a lot of people coming into this field. I am very fortunate that I'm getting a young man fresh out of college with his degree in psychology who is going to be a new case manager at Emma Life. So I'm trying to seize these young leaders, you know, these potential future leaders, and get them trained with the mission and vision as much as you can for the future. So, and with intercollaboration, you know, it's good to work together with my colleagues and to share ideas and just to make the time to do that.
So I think I'm glad that there are people out there in the community who are willing to pursue this line of work. It's always important to have a lot of people in these fields to help people with special needs and with anxiety and emotional needs like this. It's great.
Right.
Yeah, it is. I'm just worried that there's an insufficient cadre of people, you know, doing this work, because I, you know, for what I'm seeing, that population, for whatever reason, is growing. The needs are getting more complicated. And I just hope that we can find ways of finding supports so that the, you know, all of us can thrive.
And I think one thing, advocacy in this term, that, you know, direct care workers are sometimes the lowest paid workers doing the toughest jobs. And, you know, I think our legislature is recognizing that more and more often, but we've really got to make sure that, I mean, if we didn't have direct care workers, you know, people would be dying. And I don't want to sound dramatic, but I mean, really the direct care workers are, you know, our front line. And we probably pay them the least, you know, amount, and we have to pay them better. We have to pay them better because they have lives too. And they have, you know, they're sometimes the only source of, you know, breadwinners. And, you know, we need to really acknowledge and the fact that we need to pay our human service workers more. And I think that, you know, the field, you really have to have the heart for it. You have to want to do it. You have to have vision, your mission, and because otherwise you won't last in this field. But people also have, you know, realistic ways that they need to support their families as well.
And let's be honest, last I checked, it's a pretty tight job market, and people will find other ways to, you know, if they can't afford it, they'll find other ways to, you know, to support their families.
Right.
And that's right. Where the system works. So yeah. One of my wife's daughter's husbands, I didn't say it very well, the husband of one of my wife's daughters has two kids to raise, and he really would like to do something, you know, to be more supporter of youth, but the pay is terrible. So he's doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and I'm sure that he's not the only one. And I just hope we can figure out ways of supporting these folks better, because otherwise we may be in trouble.
And that's why we're encouraging more agencies like Emma Life to be formed throughout the country to help with this problem. This is a national problem. It's not just a localized problem. And I think people talk about how COVID affected things. I think COVID affected it in major ways. And it's one of those things that we have to live with. That's all.
Yep.
Charlie, we have about another minute or so. So I do want to wrap it up. And
sure.
And I appreciate your willingness to come on In Perspective to share your thoughts on disability inclusion and what you've done with MO Life. And like I said, you're setting a very good example for others who are listening, who either they want to do it themselves or know others who want to do it, you know, do similar things that you're doing, get involved and start agencies to serve people the way you serve them. And we really appreciate what you do.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me on the show. I thank you very much. And I just will wrap it up by saying that for everything that I've given, I've received so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Charlie, for being a guest on In Perspective today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to devote our program to the veterans. It's going to be a special tribute to veterans in honor of Memorial Day, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, thank you, Gene, Brad, and our participants, and Peter, and Charlie.
And
go safe with God's abundant blessings. And I'm Bob Branko. Have a great week, everybody.